My name is Daniel Moore. I'm 28 years old. Today is April the 16th, 2011. I'm in Burkeville, Virginia with my grandmother, Odette Cook.
My name is Odette Cook. I am 78 years old. Today is April the 16th, 2011. I live in Burkeville, Virginia, in the county of Nottoway. And I am the wife of Charles Herman Cook.
You live in Burkeville, Virginia, but you were not born here, and you didn't grow up here. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Paris, France. I'll go back to my ancestors, so to speak. I'll go back to my grandparents, who were Hungarian. And my grandfather was a tailor, and my grandmother was a stay-at-home mom. She had five children. And in the 20s, they were not in Budapest. They lived in a small town called Tata. And the little town, it was called Tatatóváros in Hungary. And in the 20s, there were pogroms, there were anti-Jewish demonstrations, and there was an incident that took place in their little village that told them that they should leave the area. Because of the decrees, for instance, a decree was published that no Christians could do business with Jews, and my grandfather, who was a tailor, tailor for men, his clientele were Christians. There were very few Jews who could afford a tailor-made suit. So in the 25, I would say, 26, my grandfather, my grandparents had friends who had emigrated to France, to Paris, and they had been writing to say that there was plenty of work in Paris and there was no bias or racism or against the Jews. So after debating what they should do, and of course my grandfather needed to have money to raise his children, it was decided that my grandfather would emigrate to Paris first, find a job. The man that he was corresponding with, the Hungarian man in Paris, said, "I can get you a job the day you arrive in Paris." And so he left and left his wife and five children in Tatatóváros and said, "As soon as I am able to gather enough money, I'll come back and get you, and we'll emigrate to France." So he arrived in France, and the friend found him a job as a tailor, and he worked long hours and every day of the week, and amassed enough money to go back a year later and bring his wife and five children to Paris. One of the five children was my mother, Charlotte.
And what were your grandparents' names?
My grandfather was Ignaz Grossman, and my grandmother was Janka Drasch. Grossman. She had an older sister, Rose, then my mother, Charlotte, then Albert, Jacques, and François. Those were French names given to them. My mother was not Charlotte, she was Carlotta, or Charie, depending on the... but anyway, so they arrived in Paris and lived in a very small two-bedroom apartment. But anyway, they made out well. My father's grandmother, my father was from Budapest, and his grandmother lived in Tatatóváros, very near my grandparents. And my grandparents knew my father's grandmother. So when he used to come and visit his grandmother, he would also come and say hi to my grandparents, my maternal grandparents. My mother and father were 13 years in age difference. And so my mother remembers that when my father, who had been drafted in the cavalry during World War II, or the end of World War II, World War I, excuse me, the end of World War I, he would come on his horse to visit his grandmother. And my mother was very intrigued with that horse because he had tied it almost in front of my mother's house. And my mother would mess with the horse, and my father saw her, and he was afraid. She was a little girl. He was afraid that the horse would kick her, and one day he grabbed her and spanked her. Anyway, when they emigrated to Paris, the grandmother gave a letter to her grandson who had emigrated the year before to Paris. My father had emigrated to France the year before, and he was working as a tool and die maker. And so when my maternal grandparents and their children arrived in France, shortly after that, they contacted the grandson of the grandmother that they knew to give the letter, and he started coming to my maternal grandparents' apartment, and he apparently fell in love with my mother because a year later they were married. They were, or 2 years later they were married. They were married in 1928.
In Paris?
In Paris. They had, as usual, France has the civil ceremony and the religious ceremony. So they were married on the 20th, they were married on the 1st of August, 1928, in a civil ceremony at the town hall. And then the next day, they were married at the synagogue in Paris, the 2nd of August, 1928. My grandmother spent the night at her parents' that first night after the civil marriage. And I have their marriage certificate in Hebrew, and it's a beauty. I've translated it, but I don't speak Hebrew.
So how long were they married before they began to have children?
Well, my sister was born May 1929, so just 9 months after they were married. Her name is Juliette, and my brother, André, was born in 1930, July 18th, 1930. And I came along in the 3rd of May, 1933. At that time... Well, and still today, when children of foreigners are born in France, they have to be naturalized French. So when my sister was born, a few weeks later, my father went to the town hall or wherever he had to do, and my sister became a French citizen. She was weeks old. Same thing happened to my brother when he was born. In 1933, there were some rumblings in Germany, and Germany and Hungary were allies. And my parents, who had never asked for their French naturalization, decided it was time to become French. So they, in 1933, after my birth, they asked for their French naturalization and mine at the same time. For whatever reason that we have never been able to ascertain or find out, it was denied. French government is known for their paper shuffling stuff, and a peon somewhere has decided in Germany it's not, no. So their French citizenship was denied, and so was mine. We had a lovely childhood. My father was not a wealthy man, but he provided a very nice life for us. And there was a group of Hungarians, probably in Paris, probably 150 to 200 families, Hungarian families. And every summer, there was a huge acreage near the Marne River, the Marne. There's the Seine and the Marne, M-A-R-N-E, river. And there was a big camping area. And the Hungarian must have rented that land, but it was humongous. And each family erected their own tent. We were camping all summer, and it was elaborate. There was the bedroom, and there was the ante room where we sat down and ate, and it was really a camping at its best. And of course, everybody was Hungarian, not all Jews, but most of them. And so we had a lovely childhood. The fathers used to come on weekend on Friday night and spend Saturday and Sunday with their family and then go back to their work. It was about 50 miles, 60 miles from Paris, not terribly far. Anyway, I had very fond memories, and I'll put in a little aside. When I was about 6 years old or so, there was a little boy, a little Hungarian boy, we called him Jojo Binder, and he was the terror of my young life. He was a tease, and he was a troublemaker. He was a year older than I was. And not troublemaker as we know them today, but he was just lively, overactive. And anyway, one day he locked me in a little shed where brooms and shovels and stuff were kept. And that place was crawling with spiders. And he locked the door and he said, "I'm not letting you out of here until you count backwards from 100 to 1 in Hungarian." Backwards. Well, needless to say, I was like 6 years old. I could count forward maybe to 20, but that was about the gist of it. And it seems to me that I stayed in that little shack for about a year, but it probably was 10 minutes or 15 minutes. But he ruined my life, because to this day I'm traumatized by spiders. And I passed on this fear to my children. So recently my brother said, and this was 70 years ago, my brother said to me, "Do you know who I talked with on the phone yesterday?" And this was early last week. And I said, "I have no idea. Who did you talk to?" "I talked to Jojo Binder." "Really? How did you find him?" "Well," he said, "it was easy to find him on the internet." So he said, "I'm going to give you his phone number and you call him." So I called, and the first thing I said, "I'm Odette." He said, "I don't think I know Odette." I said, "I'm Dede Zwillinger's sister." "Oh, yes, yes, yes." I said, "Jojo, I have waited 70 years to kick you in the rear end." And we laughed. Anyway, in 1939, and we had a charmed childhood. In 1939, at the declaration of war between France and Germany, the French authorities came to the camp, it was during the week, and said, "You have to depart from here in 2 hours. You have to leave this place in 2 hours." So we couldn't understand why, because France has declared war in Germany and Germany was with Hungary. So we had to leave, and somebody called the fathers to come and get us. Anyway, we left. We went back home, and then, of course, the war became what we know. The French had erected, the French are arrogant, and they had erected the Maginot Line, which was a line of concrete bunkers-like to stop the German tanks. And they thought, you know, it was Alsace, near the northeast of France, and they thought, nah, Germans are never going to be able to breach those monoliths of concrete, but it was child play for Germans. So as the Germans were advancing towards northeast France, they had passed Belgium, they had passed Holland. The people of those countries were fleeing ahead of the Germans, because panic and rumors and took hold of the population of those countries. And as they flooded into France, pushing pushcarts and wheelbarrows and baby carriages, you know, like we see refugees now in various countries, that's how it was. And it is estimated, so the people of northern France panicked and moved on down south. Pretty soon, Paris panicked, because there were words that women were nailed to the church doors, and that they would cut open the bellies of women and take the babies out and then crashed them on the church doors, killed the babies on the... Those were untrue. They were rumors. They were simply untrue. It was the German army, and the German army was absolutely disciplined. They marched into Paris, and as the population poured outside of Paris and also from the northern countries, you know, the eastern part of France and Belgium. And we had an old car. We called her Rosalie. And we piled some stuff in it, and we piled food, and we piled mattresses, and we piled clothes, and off we go with the rest of the population. It was estimated that 12 million people were on the road. The roads, they didn't know where they were going. They were just fleeing ahead of the enemy. And we passed farms, farmhouses with cows crying because they hadn't been milked, and farmhouses deserted, and we slept and then pretty soon there was no gas in the car. We had to abandon the car on the side of the road, and there were hundreds and hundreds of cars abandoned on the side of the road. Meanwhile, the Italian Air Force was, shelling the people on the road, not to their dishonor. The Italian Air Force were shelling the refugees on the road. We decided one night to take a refuge under a bridge. We were walking, and we took refuge under a huge bridge, and Italian Air Force blew up the bridge and us underneath. We were not hurt. Somewhere, we were not. Anyway, we continued on our escaping, and pretty soon word got out to everybody who was on the road. An armistice has been declared by France and Germany. No more fighting. Marshal Pétain, who was president of France, opened the doors of France and Paris for the German to come in, because he said there's no need for destruction, for killing, for you are superior to us, you come in. And he established his government in Vichy, which is halfway below, in France, mid-France. What I didn't know, what we didn't know, was that he was a rabid anti-Semite. Rabid. And what the decrees were passed on to him, he not only enforced the decrees against the Jews, but he multiplied. In 1941, my parents and all the Jews, not all the Jews, but a huge number of Jewish parents had their children baptized in the Catholic Church, hoping, because they heard it was, by then deportation had started, hoping that it would save their children from deportation. But it didn't. It was false, because even nuns and priests who had Jewish ancestors, sixth or seventh generation, had to wear the yellow star. My mother, so we were Catholic. In 1940, there was a census of the population, and we all, the adults, parents, had to go to the town hall to register in order to get a new ID card and to get food stamps. So my mother went, and when they said religion, she said Jewish. So in red ink in her and my father's identity card was written Jewish, Jew, in red ink. Problems started. I was so young, I had no idea what Jewish meant.
Do you remember being baptized or anything like that?
I have no recollection of being baptized, but I have my baptism certificate. But, you know, I was talking to my sister some maybe last year, and my sister said, you know, it is almost as if I have amnesia of what happened between 40 and 45. She said, I remember snippets of things, but I couldn't write a book because I have no recollection, no dates, the year, what. We remember the fear. In 1940, started the raids on France. Germany was bombing Paris, France. The Allies were having dogfights over, you know, the countryside, and, you know, they were fighting each other. And so the siren the alarm would go off from the people in charge, and so anyway, the siren was several times during the night, and we had to go into shelter, and our shelter that we were assigned to was in the bowels of the earth of a baker shop. And I remember, I was too young to wear a gas mask, but my sister, we had to wear gas masks at the beginning of the war, because in 1914, the Germans had used gas and killed people that way. So we all were issued gas masks, my brother and sister, but they didn't have for little kids. So what we had to do when we were, it may sound strange to the listener, but we had a piece of cotton, and I had to urinate on the piece of cotton and hold it to my face, nose, and hand. And anyway, those were difficult times, and we had no food. In the meantime, my mother, the deportation had started of Jews, and my mother wisely went back to the town hall and said, "Someone stole my pocketbook with all my papers. So I need some new ID card. I've lost everything." So she had a set of new ID card made. And when they said religion, she said Catholic. So there was no Jew in the ID card. And that's how she was able to travel back and forth, and, you know, on the metro and on the buses, and go and look for food. And in 42, the Germans came, and this is where I am not clear. We were told to leave our apartment, that there would be French police would come to take us. And so we had a friend who had a little business in a courtyard, and there was a little house there behind those massive wooden doors that slides. And he said, "Stay there." And so we went to live there, and my father continued working a little bit in the business of this man. And I remember one night, my parents, we had no clothes. We had left the apartment just as we were. So my father and my mother, in the dark, went back to the apartment, pushing a little pushcart, a little something. And there were seals on the door that they broke. And they went in, got clothes. And when they neared where we were staying, my sister, my brother, and I, it was dark night, they saw a Frenchman, a French policeman, and a German banging on the door, on those huge doors. And my parents died of fright. And we were dying of fright inside the little house. And Juliette, my sister, was holding us under her arm. And we understood light. What it was, they wanted us to turn the light. There was a curfew, you know, blackout curfew, and we had not turned the light off. So in the meantime, my parents passed by these the German and policemen, and they greeted them, bonsoir, messieurs, you know, good evening, and went on their way and around the corner, and then they saw that they left, the German and the French policeman left because Juliette had turned the light off. And so they came back in, and of course we told them what happened, but the fright is still with me. Anyway, in 43, it must be for the end of 42, 43, my father was arrested. He was denounced as a Jew by neighbors. There was an awful lot of denunciation by the French people themselves. It is estimated that the German government received about 5 million denunciation that this man is Jew, that family is Jew, then, because there is anti-Semitism in France, tremendous anti-Semitism. And so my father was taken. And immediately my mother took us to Anne-et-la-Côte, country farmers who took us in. And we were with them for 20 or 22 months and only came back to Paris in 45. Meanwhile, we didn't know where my father was. First, he was taken to Austria. He was a tool and die maker. He was a master, and they needed work. So he was taken as a laborer, forced laborer. And then he went to camp, various camps. And then the last was in Belsen, but it was Bergen-Belsen. There were two camps. One was extermination camp. The other one was a working camp for labor, forced labor. That's where he was. And then the war ended. The Russians liberated the camp. And my father came back through the Red Cross, of course, months and months later. He didn't know we were alive. By that time, we had come back to Paris with my mother. And my father was able to come near where we lived. He didn't dare come and to find out if we had been exterminated or taken. You know, he had no news of us, and we were safe. Unfortunately, 26 members of the family, from both my mother's side and father's side, were exterminated at Auschwitz. And the end of the war came. We tried to, you know, there was no food or very little food. My mother went to work. My mother spoke German fluently, and there was an American camp at Orly. Orly was just outside of Paris. It was a French airport that was given half of it or three quarters of the airport to the American government to make an American Air Force camp, and they had German prisoners of war. and they needed German-speaking people to translate as translators. My mother was one of the first to work there, and she, you know, and I will tell of an incident. There was an awful lot of black market with the French workers on the camp because, you know, they were taking things out, Americans, selling it on the black market and getting money to feed their family. And so it was not possible to take out anything from the workers. They were frisked as they were coming out of the camp at night, and the women were frisked also. So the women devised a system. It was like a plastic bag with long strings. And they would put food in the plastic bag and let it dangle between their legs and tie it around their waist. And come out of the camp, they would be frisked, but not between the legs. And as soon as they were outside of the camp, two or three workers cover, you know, with coats and what have you, and the women took the plastic bag off. And years later, I said to my mother, you know, I remember when you used to bring cake and thing from Orly. But I said, you know, I never asked you, but I remember it was always mushed, flat. Why? Why the piece of cake and the food was always so flat? And it was probably in the 60s that I learned how my mother fed us by food that she was taking out of the American camp to feed us. And I grew up, I went to school, and I passed my the baccalaureate in France is in two parts, 2 years. I passed the first one at the Lycée Fénelon in Paris, and I was weak in English. My English was not, I didn't get a good mark. So it was, a friend of mine had spent the previous summer in London working in a hospital as an orderly and living in the nurse's quarters. So I did the same thing. I went to England for the summer. I went to school. I attended school. And at night, I was working in the hospital as an orderly, emptying bedpans and this and that and the other thing. It was the hospital St. Mary's where Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin. So I have that. And instead of staying 3 months, I was so enjoying the freedom, I stayed 2 years.
And I must say that your English has improved considerably.
I came back to Paris, and shortly after, I decided to go work at the American Air Force camp in Orly. We live not far from there, and on the first day of the job, I was hired right away and as a typist and secretary. And on the first day of the job, I heard talking near my office. I was so, I was 19 years old and I was extremely, not shy, but I mean, it was the first time and I was working for Americans and I was typing in English. And all of a sudden I looked up, I saw a man standing in front of my typewriter and I looked up and he was smiling. And I said, hello. And he said to me, you are a living doll. And he said it in French. Vous êtes une poupée vivante. And I was a goner. And that was your grandfather. And that I was 19. and the love affair started.
How long after that did you marry him?
In 52. And
were you already living in America at that point?
No, I lived in France. And my first child, your mother, was born in 54. And I came to the United States in 1956. Your grandfather was transferred to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And he came by himself to rent an apartment and furnish it before I come. And I arrived in January 16th, 1956. And my love affair with America has never stopped.
Well, thank you so much for taking this time to talk with me today. Is there anything else that you'd like to, any other final thoughts that you have before we conclude?
No. When I came to America, it was not under duress like a lot of immigrants. I came of my own free will. I didn't feel American. I loved being living in America, but I didn't feel in my bone that I was American. And then I had my four children. After my first daughter, who was born in France, your mother, I had three more who were born in America. And when in the early 60s, we went on vacation, I took the girls to Italy. And we were in Rome, and I asked where the American embassy in Rome was, because the girls were sick and tired of Italian food. They wanted a hamburger, and they wanted to eat in the dining room at the embassy. So we walked to the embassy, and just as I neared the embassy, I saw the American flag fluttering, and I said, "I am an American." And that's how immediately when we came back from vacation, I did the paper that needed to become an American citizen.
Thank you very much, Mimi.
You're very welcome.